Blog Talk Radio.
All the laws and legislation in the world will never heal this world like the loving hearts and arms of mothers and fathers. You know, if every child could drift to sleep feeling wrapped in the love of their family and God's love, this world would be a far more gentle and better place. President Obama promised to begin to slow the rise of the oceans and to heal the planet. My promise is to help you and your family.
Look here. I'm talking about America.
She's here for your country. She's here for your state. She's here for your family. She's your voice against the erosion of your culture. Missouri Grassroots Radio is proud to present your culture vigilante, Miss Lisa Payne Nager. She's here for you.
Good evening and happy Wednesday to you. And I grin every time I hear those great intros by Dave. Thank you again, Dave, for putting those great intros together. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio, and this is your Culture Vigilante Hour. We have a full lineup for you tonight of things to do right before the election to take back your country. A lot of good people to talk to. A lot of good people will be with us on tonight to talk about some very interesting things regarding the election. And I'm just here to tell you tonight that I hate Skype. I, 5 minutes before you're supposed to sign on the air and the Skype doesn't work, so I'm on my landline, so I'm hoping that everything's coming through loud and clear and we don't lose anybody, or, namely me, the host, gets to stay on the air with you for the entire time that we're on. It's been a very busy week. We're here with Dave Court. He's going to help me make things run smoothly tonight. Thank you for being with us, Dave.
Always a pleasure to be with you, Lisa.
Well, I always appreciate that. You always seem to be pulling my backside out of the fire with this technology thing. I don't like it. Thank you for helping.
No worries. My pleasure.
So, busy week. We had a pretty good show on Monday night. We covered a lot of topics. We're kind of just down to the wire. There's almost very little that we can say about the upcoming elections. We've covered so much.
We have.
Last night, though, as, in true, campaigning style and all of the stuff that's going on before the elections, I was I had the pleasure of spending the evening with Gina Loudon. And here in St. Louis, she flew into town from California to campaign for Todd Akin, and she was in a Rock the House event with Gina Loudon and Stacey Washington, and they were here to talk mostly about, women standing with Akin and all of the great things that, hopefully Todd Akin will bring as our next U.S. Senator from Missouri. That was a fun event. I posted some Facebook pictures up on my Facebook page, and there's a picture or two up on the Missouri Grassroots Coalition page. They had a full house. Very enthusiastic people there. They have a lot of action items for people that want to get actively involved in their campaign. You can go to Akin.org and, get campaign signs, do some calling, send some money. They have sign waves and events and campaign events all over the state. That is probably the hardest working campaign I've ever seen. Those folks are really scrambling. And they need to scramble because I posted a couple of articles this week, one at examiner.com and one on politigix.tv. And it seems that Todd Akin is about $12 million behind in raising funds behind Claire McCaskill. She's outraised him by $12 million. And we know that's the result of the fact that the NRC and the NRSC has pulled their financial backing from Todd in a pissing contest they started with him after he refused to step out of the race in September. And despite the fact, some of the polls have him, even with Claire McCaskill, there was a Rasmussen poll that came out just a couple of days ago that has him 8 points behind. And I've said before, I don't really think I am buying what's in the polls this year. I think there's a lot of distorted information going in and out of those polls, coming and going. I think there may be a lot of people not admitting that they're supporting Todd, and I think they'll have to go out and support him anyway, because most of us don't want Claire McCaskill in office again. And we'll actually get into some of the reasons why. I mean, there are a lot of reasons why we don't want Claire McCaskill in office. You know, she was the deciding vote for Obamacare. She is not the moderate that she claims to be for Missourians. She comes to Missouri and says one thing and flies back to D.C. and says, you know, votes in a complete opposite different way. And we're going to have Darren Morley from Reboot Congress on with us in just a minute. He's got some really incredible blockbuster information on Claire. And just, I mean, it seems that within the last week or so, there's been one scandal after another breaking with this woman and her finances and her husband's business. So we'll have Darren on in a couple minutes to talk about that. Have you heard anything, Dave, about the voter fraud and the voter tampering going on today? Have you heard the stories?
I have not heard the stories today, no.
Okay. Three cities so far that I've heard of today have already experienced early voter issues where the voting machines have been clocking ticks for when the people have intentionally voted for Romney. It's happened in North Carolina. There was a case of it in St. Louis here, and one in Nevada. And you kind of have to wonder, you know. I mean, people, you know, inquiring minds are wanting to know. That little conspiracy theory thing is going off in everybody's head. With things being as tight as they are, you're kind of wondering if there's some voter tampering going on. In all three of these cases, the voting machines clocked for Obama instead of Romney when they were supposed to clock for Romney. So you just kind of wonder.
Do you know from what you read how they figure that out?
Well, I think it's the electronic voting, the computer voting.
Right.
And the people could see immediately that their vote was not being clicked.
Oh, I see. Okay.
We've all read those articles from before that the computer voting machines have been bought from Hugo Chavez in South America, and that,
right,
you know, there's all of that kind of stuff floating around in the back of everybody's mind. And with the early voting going on, it does not seem to be going as well. So we'll keep an eye on that. That all of that stuff just broke earlier today, and it's all a little new and unresearched. But I'm sure that we'll see more as time goes on.
Yeah.
Let's see. Maybe we should just move on to what we've got. Let's take a little break. And we'll come back with Darren Morley. Darren's got some great information. We talked last week. There was a Missouri Record published a post on McCaskill's $300 million man. Her husband, Joseph Shepherd, reported that he received $40 million in stimulus spending. And Darren's got some great information on just how that money was spent and where it was going. So let's take a little break, and we'll come back with Darren from Reboot Congress. Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project.
Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is your Culture Vigilante Hour. We're here every Wednesday evening from 7 until we're finished. We might be, it might be one of those until we're finished nights tonight. We had kind of a long week last week, and we have a lot of information to go through. It's the pre-election thing. I think there's just so much stuff going on. Speaking of a lot of stuff going on, you know, we're all sitting around waiting for that October surprise. We've all been following the Todd Akin situation very closely. It's been a roller coaster. You know, Akin has just been through the meat grinder, you know, during this election season. And Claire McCaskill has seemingly gone through it unscathed. Well, Darren Morley from Reboot Congress, he's a St. Louis Tea Party member, and he's a great blogger. He's a great investigative reporter and blogger up here in St. Louis. Go to rebootcongress.net, and you'll see everything that he's got, that he's been reporting on for several years now, since the inception of the Tea Party, I believe. But Darren has uncovered some incredible information on our friend Claire. You know, we know that she doesn't pay her taxes on her airplanes, and she flies out of town to visit her grandkids, and, you know, there's a lot of things that Claire does that just don't seem to measure up to what she talks about when she's out on the campaign stump. And Darren alerted me last week to a story that was on the Missouri Record. Patrick Toohey published some information that was just breaking about Claire's husband, Joe Shepard. And it seems that Joe Shepard is, you know, he's a businessman, a multi-million-dollar businessman, and he and Claire live quite well. And since last week, there have been several stories breaking about Joe Shepard's interest in using tax credits to build his hundreds of businesses. He's got just absolutely hundreds of businesses. We're not actually criticizing him for being a capitalist. I think what we're criticizing him for is doing it on the people's dime. And we've got Darren here with us to kind of give us all the details. Thanks for being with us, Darren.
Thank you for that introduction, Lisa. How are you tonight?
Very good. Thanks for taking the time. I know you're a busy man. You got a couple of kids and a busy life, and you've got your head fully immersed in all of this craziness with this election. And I know you've done a lot of research, because I was on your blog today looking at the extensive research that you've done into the finances of Joe Shepard and his tax credit history here.
Right. Let me actually start. I'd like to just say, I don't know if you heard the news. I saw earlier today that Senator McCaskill's mother is critically ill and in the hospital. So I just wanted to say that my thoughts and prayers are with the senator and her family in this time. I understand she's taking some time off from campaigning.
Absolutely.
And with that, I'd just like to talk a little bit more about the different aspects of Claire McCaskill and her husband Joseph Shepard's businesses. As you pointed out, there are literally hundreds of businesses that Joseph Shepard has identified and are listed on Claire McCaskill's financial disclosure form. And so there are sort of three financial aspects I want to talk about. You've already kind of hit one, and I don't want to spend too much time on this, so I'll just dismiss it pretty quickly, and that's the stimulus money. The Daily Caller has identified, I think it's $39 million worth of stimulus funds that have gone to help businesses that Joseph Shepard has a financial interest in. The next one is tax credits, and I'm not sure how much you've talked about tax credits on your program, so I'm not sure how familiar your audience is with the tax credit programs, and specifically the low-income housing tax credits that are offered to help build apartments and rehab apartments and other homes for people who may be not as well off as you and I and need some financial assistance for housing. Have you talked about those at all on your show in the past?
So not extensively. Go ahead and give us a rundown.
Okay, so I'll just talk a little bit about the mechanics of how the tax credits work. And then after that, I'll dive into the main point that I'm going to talk about tonight, which is how much rent Claire McCaskill is collecting from obviously her tenants, or her husband's tenants, really, who are obviously impoverished if they're living in Section 8 housing. But that rent is also subsidized by you and I, the taxpayer. So stepping back to tax credits, the basic process is that a project to rehab or build some new apartment buildings will be approved by the state. There's a board in charge of approving that. Once those funds are made available, The developer who is awarded the funds will typically sell those tax credits. The reason the developer will sell the tax credits is they have a need to raise capital immediately in order to do whatever it is they're doing, the rehab. You know, they need to go buy their supplies, they need to pay contractors, et cetera. So they need to raise funds immediately. They can't wait for tax day, you know, half a year or more away in order to cash out their tax credits. So they'll sell those tax credits. The problem is, or, well, the way the system works is that they can only sell those tax credits to somebody who is also invested in that property and invested in that project. Typically, Joseph Shepherd will establish a small investment in whatever the project is, and one of his companies will offer to purchase those tax credits. The purchase price for tax credits is not dollar for dollar. So I have seen reports of some tax credits being bought for as little as 40 cents on the dollar. I don't know exactly what numbers Joseph Shepherd is spending to buy the tax credits. It might be as high as 80 or 90 cents on the dollar. But I think, you know, the point being there is a range there and it can be pretty low. What Shepherd and his business interests then do is they resell the tax credits that they bought. Okay, so they've spent, say, $500,000 to buy $1 million in tax credits. They then sell those $1 million of tax credits to maybe an investment bank or some other financial institution, and they'll get a little bit more than whatever it was that they paid for them. So they'll sell those $1 million of tax credits for, say, 75 or 80 cents on the dollar. So if it's 75 cents, he's basically made a 50% return, right? He's made 25 cents on the 50 cents per dollar that that he spent. The investment bank will then sell those tax credits to its customers, its clientele. It'll have a much broader base of it'll be a much broader market into which it's selling. And so it will sell those tax credits for maybe 90, 95 cents on the dollar. So the bank makes some money, Shepherd and his businesses make some money, and, you know, they obviously use some of that money to run the business. But the point being is that there is a significant amount of money made not by the developer working on the project. In other words, these tax credits, the purpose of these tax credits is to develop low-income housing. And the realized value that winds up going towards that low-income housing might only be, like I said, 40, 50 cents on the dollar, while you have all of these other players in the market that are essentially making capital gains off of this tax credit asset. Does that make sense? Do you have any questions?
And that's where the rub comes in. And all of this is off the taxpayers' money. I mean, these tax credits are sponsored by the state, which is your tax dollars.
Let me clarify that, though. I mean, that's a good point, but the tax credits, the government has created a market for a product that would otherwise not exist. So the tax credits are out there, and the fact that they can be traded is why there's this aftermarket in tax credits that, you know, sees tax credits trading for something less than a dollar, because obviously if you're not going to spend more than a dollar to avoid paying a tax, right? You want to save money. That's the whole point. So the aftermarket and sort of the issues with the aftermarket are an area that's in need of reform.
Right. Okay, so let's move on to the next phase here. Let's talk about a little bit about how this is affecting the taxpayers as far as Claire and her husband's businesses and how that's translating into a windfall for them.
Well, I blogged about this might have been about a week ago, the fact that one of the companies that Joseph Shepherd is involved in fact, he's identified as drawing a salary from this company, and that is Sugar Creek Realty, has on their website a list of all of the different projects that they've worked on. So they list all of these different projects as well as the tax credit awards that each of those projects has received. As a result, you can see kind of the ballpark figure of the volume of business that Shepherd's businesses are doing. Now, that's not to say – the bottom line figure, by the way, is about $315 million. That's not to say that that's money that Shepherd would realize. That's the total value of the tax credits. So if he's getting, you know, somewhere from 10 to 25% for sales of tax credits, then his business's take on that $315 million of tax credits would be in the, you know, I think like 30 to 70 million range. And again, that's to his businesses. So, you know, he has salaries to pay. There are expenses that he has to address, but that's still a huge windfall. Go ahead.
Well, okay. So, and basically what's happening here for him to be able to start these businesses, I mean, he's really doing this off the money that he's making off these tax credits. Businesses are not putting their own investments in to start these businesses. They're taking tax dollars to finance the startups of these businesses.
Correct. I imagine each developer is putting something on the line, but there's no doubt that there is a huge, effectively a huge subsidy coming from taxpayers to build out these different businesses. So, in effect, you and I, the taxpayers, have helped Mr. Shepherd build a portfolio of low-income housing rental properties. And the one side effect of the fact that we helped Mr. Shepherd build this portfolio of investment properties is that we get to pay Mr. Shepherd rent every month.
How does that work?
So looking at Claire McCaskill's financial disclosure form, the 2011 one, which is the most recent one that's been filed, the Section 3B, which outlines the non-publicly traded assets and unearned income sources, identifies, you know, over 100 companies, we'd already mentioned this, that Joseph Shepherd has an interest in. What I did is I went through and shortened that list up, and this post, I just posted this tonight, so if you go to my blog, rebootcongress.net, you can see the numbers here. I reduced the companies just to the companies that, one, pay an income of rent and interest of at least $100,000 or more. So the way the financial disclosure form works, it's kind of an eye chart with a lot of check boxes. It's pretty difficult to read. So I've changed the presentation of the data. So basically identified, I think it's about seven companies, three of them provide Shepherd and McCaskill with at least $1 million of rent and interest income. In one case, actually, it's there's also some capital gain. But the bottom line figure is that McCaskill in 2011 drew $2.2 million in monthly rental income and interest on security deposits for these properties. So that works out to about $183,000 a month that McCaskill and Shepherd are realizing in rental and interest on security deposits. So I don't begrudge anybody making money, but I don't think that it's appropriate to take advantage of both the poor and the taxpayer to the tune of multiple millions of dollars a year. The reform that I think we need to look at is how can we address this such that we can provide quality housing for the poor, because there's obviously a problem there, while also saving the taxpayer money.
Yeah, to the tune of almost $190,000 a month. That's a lot of money.
Exactly.
That's a huge amount of money.
Now, I would also emphasize, just to clarify, that's the low number. That's when I take out sort of all of the caveats. If you look at my blog, again, it's rebootcongress.net, you'll see the assumptions that I'm making to arrive at that number. One, and I'll just talk through some of this because I think that it can be confusing. there are two properties that generate $1 million of rent and interest income, only rent and interest income. They are the Missouri Tax Credit Fund and the Georgia Housing Tax Credit Fund. And so when you look at those, you see it's got fund in the name, so maybe this is doing the tax credit stuff. But the problem is there are other assets that are investment assets and whatnot that are generating capital gains or dividends or stuff like that that are on the form. Furthermore, both the Missouri Tax Credit Fund and the Georgia Housing Tax Credit Fund are identified on McCaskill's form. They're described as real estate affordable housing. And because she's categorized the revenue from both of them as being rent and interest, it stands to reason that what she's getting is rent and interest, and therefore it's as I've described already.
Yeah. So when Claire's out there stumping it during her campaign as one of the little people here, you know, advocating for the little guy, she's not necessarily Claire from the Hood anymore. She's making some
right,
big,
and the thing that's so frustrating or most appalling about this is the fact that in effect she's used taxpayer money to build a private portfolio that pays a monthly dividend of at least $180,000. That's pretty insane.
Astounding.
And we're both, you know, we both bought that for her, as well as pay, you know, some portion of that $180 monthly rent check.
Yeah. There's some pretty incredible audio on Daily Caller of her husband, I believe, making these tax credit deals in the Senate dining room as well.
Correct.
So,
yeah. So what you're talking about, there was a whistleblower who came out and talked about the fact that Joseph Shepard was making deals in the Senate dining room involving either tax credits or forming new businesses and whatnot.
This is not the first time. You know, obviously this is not a big surprise or not, you know, not something new in the Joseph Shepard, Claire McCaskill business plan.
Correct. Keep in mind is that Claire McCaskill actually has a reputation of being very supportive of whistleblowers. In fact, I think it was in 2006 or 2007 where she sponsored a bill to help protect independent IGs. I'm trying to remember what it stands for. So she sponsored a bill called the Inspectors General Reform Act, which was intended to protect IGs. And yet when Gerald Wolpin spoke out against abuses of out in California, of abuses caused by somebody within the Obama administration, a big donor to the Obama campaign, McCaskill basically swept it under the rug. So she's been critical of the latest whistleblower from that the Daily Caller had on, but she has a reputation of talking out of both sides of her mouth on this. And we've seen this as well when she talks fiscal conservatism here in the state of Missouri, and then she votes for gutting Medicaid in order to fund Obamacare in Washington, D.C. So, you know, there's just this inconsistency that I think we've seen with McCaskill.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this woman, you know, could very likely go back to Washington, D.C., you know, and her husband can continue to use her position as a United States senator to continue to make these deals with your tax dollars, folks. So, you know, you need to get involved and engaged and make sure that this doesn't happen. This is absolutely not the kind of politics that you want to be sending back to D.C., supposedly with someone who's not really representing your best interest. They're really getting rich off of your tax dollars and playing the system, absolutely playing the system to her benefit, not looking out for the folks.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. The one thing which I would add on that is I don't think that it's technically illegal to make business deals in the Senate dining room, but it is outrageous. And that the way that we've solved problems like this, because it is outrageous, is we have to vote her out. So that's why that point is so important. I also want to point out there's a lot of data that I've looked at here, but it wasn't me alone. There are other people who have helped me along the way, who have done research, sent it my way. I really appreciate the input from other people who have an interest in, you know, similar political goals to send either information to me or, you know, if they just want to point me in the direction of an interesting story that they saw, that is always helpful. So the point that I want to emphasize is there have been people who have helped me with this research. One person in particular who would like to remain anonymous. So just know that it's not one person. And if, in fact, you think you have a story but you want to remain anonymous, try and find a blogger to help you through that. So.
And that's what the citizen journalism situation is all about, folks, because you're not going to get this in the mainstream media. This has been floating around the blogosphere and the Internet seriously for a week. There's a lot of information out there on the Internet about this, but you are not seeing it in the mainstream. So contact Darren at rebootcongress.net if you have some information you'd like to contribute to this story. Darren's done some great work on the Murdoch for Senate campaign before in the past, too, and he was one of the first people out there with that information. You know, you just weren't hearing about it anywhere, and Darren did a lot of information, a lot of research and a lot of posting on that as well. Darren's a member of the St. Louis Tea Party. The St. Louis Tea Party has a lot of great information on multiple bloggers there. So Google the St. Louis Tea Party and get onto their information list. Is there any outside of rebootcongress.net, how do they find you on Twitter, Darren?
You can find me at DSM012 on Twitter. So just look for me on Twitter there. Also, is it correct that you've got Peter Kinder coming on later today?
He's in the lineup. He's in the studio, just waiting to go.
Okay. I just want to just say a word about Peter. Peter has been a real asset to the Republican Party in Missouri in the sense that he has reached out to the African-American community in ways that other Republicans really haven't. He has really developed a relationship with the black community here, especially in St. Louis, that I feel other Republican candidates need to do. And we're talking, you know, when talking about tax credits, especially low-income housing tax credits, that is definitely a problem that affects the black community more so than the white community. So we need to be cognizant of whatever reforms we wind up putting in place in order to address abuses of the tax credit system. We need to make sure that those policies are crafted in a way that they don't make the situation worse. At the end of the day, we want people to live in safe housing. So that's got to be the goal, and it's not an easy problem to solve. So, I just want to applaud Peter for really being kind of on the forefront within the black community.
Okay. Thank you, Darren. Darren at rebootcongress.net. Thanks for being with us, Darren.
Thanks, Lisa. You take care.
Hey, we're going to take a break, and we're coming back with the Lieutenant Governor.
This is the Grassroots Minute. We hear all the horror stories from the environmentalists that put forth the idea that oil fracking is destroying the earth. Of course, until they test the water before any fracking is performed, they are mostly political in nature to fit their agenda. For instance, the movie Grassland sounded terrible until it was discovered that the water there had been ignitable for decades in a well-known natural occurrence. Did anyone notice the fact was left out of the movie? If there are dangers or downsides, we need that confirmed and remedied, but must not let this government limit our ability to produce our own energy. We could become a third world country overnight if the Saudis decide to cut off our oil. Do we want to chance that? Fracking has been going on for decades. It was only when it appeared that natural gas was going to be the energy of the future instead of solar and wind the big stink came about. I believe the extreme environmentalists and the folks who want to implement Agenda 21 are behind this scare. Another little-known fact is that the poster child of green energy, Germany, has given up on solar and wind after spending millions and millions on subsidies. German President Merkel is a realist and wants to save the economy of her country. Therefore, Germany is in the process of building over 30 coal-fired plants in her country, and we are shutting down our coal plants. What does that say to you? We need the energy that it produces to stay energy independent. The environmental nightmares of the green energies are never discussed. Have you ever asked yourself why? I'm Terry Varner for the Grassroots Minute.
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. and our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
Welcome back. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio, and I'm Lisa Payne Nager, and this is your Culture Vigilante Hour. One of the things that you can do as a culture vigilante to take back your government is to get involved and engaged in a campaign. And there's certainly enough information out there floating around on all the candidates and all the issues for you to do something about that within the next couple of weeks. Yard signs, walking doors, making phone calls. And the only way, folks, I mean, this is the election of our, the most important election in our history. So the only way for us to come out on top after November 6th is for people that aren't normally engaged to get engaged. So do something yourself and bring a friend with you because this election is just too important. And with that, we have with us tonight a Lieutenant Governor, Peter Kinder. He's running for re-election here in Missouri as Missouri's Lieutenant Governor. And he's here to give us a campaign update and to let us know what he's been finding out there on the campaign trail. Welcome.
Thank you for having me back, Lisa. It's a great pleasure to be with you. And I must say I was honored and humbled by those comments from your previous guest. Was that Darren?
That was Darren Morley, yeah.
Yeah, Darren Morley, a great guy. He's doing some great work and some great investigative journalism that the mainstream media is not doing.
Absolutely. And I guess as a candidate for Lieutenant Governor, especially on the Republican side of the you run up against a lot of that where you have information to get out that maybe the mainstream media is just not doing for you.
Well, absolutely, and that's why I'm grateful for the opportunity to come on your air. I want to talk about my battle against Obamacare, but I also want to say that foremost in my mind this week and today has been the need to stand up to this idea of UN election monitors coming into the United States of America and presuming to tell us whether we're conducting elections on the up and up. I think it's an outrage. And this is not what our forefathers, you know, rose up against British tyranny to go back under the tyranny of an unaccountable multilateral, United Nations or any outside this country, any organization outside this country that is unaccountable to the people who formed the union and whose first words of our Constitution are "We the people."
Absolutely. I've heard a little bit about that, and it's just astounding. And we have a regular segment that we've been doing here on Culture Vigilante. Our Ray Cuneo joins us just about every week and talks about UN's Agenda 21. And,
yeah.
I mean, there's just a horrible overreach from the United Nations.
It's an incredible overreach. And, you know, every other week, either Hillary Clinton or the worst attorney general in American history, Eric Holder, or someone else from the Obama administration is over at the UN laying plans to sign away our sovereignty, to invade choices that properly reside at the local level with people governing themselves in a self-governing republic, or to give away our gun rights or to submit us to global taxation. And that is going to be the agenda of any Obama second term, and all constitutionalists need to be on our guard and sounding the alarm sending out emails and getting on Facebook and getting on Twitter and getting this word out, because the mainstream media will not cover this. They're covering up for this president.
Absolutely. And I mean, and we see cover-up, you know, all the way down the line, even to the state level. You've been very helpful here to us at Missouri Grassroots Coalition in helping us bring attention to the Prop E debacle that we had here a couple of months ago.
Oh, yes, with Robin Carnahan's outrageously biased language on Prop E, which everyone should know is a yes vote on your November ballot. That's the measure referred to a vote of the people. I think it was Senate Bill 474. And it says that we're not going to have these Obamacare health care exchanges in Missouri unless there's a vote of the people authorizing it or a vote of their elected representatives in the House and Senate. And it's as simple as that. And when Robin Carnahan, our Secretary of State, came down with the most bias-loaded language ever, I sued her in court, and as soon as we got it in front of a circuit judge in Cole County, he basically laughed her out of court, struck down her language, and allowed us to do her job for her and rewrite the ballot language in fair and impartial language.
Absolutely. And it was egregious language. I just couldn't believe it. We were
outraged.
It
did not pass the laugh test. And even her fellow Democrat, the Attorney General, whose job it was to defend her, when the judge, they gave it the best half-hearted defense they could, considering how laughable it was. And then when the judge ruled for us, Robin Carnahan wanted to appeal, of course, all the way to the Supreme Court. And the Attorney General said, I'm not going to appeal this. This does not pass the laugh test. We're done.
That's telling you something when your own won't defend you.
That's telling you that was a remarkable event unlike any I remember. So I was heartened by that. And I know all patriots and constitutionalists in Missouri are going to stand up with me as I call on the leaders of the legislature to join me in saying that there will be no UN election monitors in Missouri.
Very good.
I stand with Texas Attorney General Greg Abbott, who was in the national media today. He was on Fox this afternoon, saying he has a statute in Texas that these people, if they get closer than 100 feet to the polling place, he intends to arrest them.
So how can we handle that here in Missouri?
Well, I'm looking into it, Lisa, and I'll keep you posted, okay? Because I basically think we need to send a message that they are not welcome and that we don't want them in our state. And you know, the state of Missouri does have sovereignty under our system, under our federal system. There's sovereignty at the federal level, and the states have what we call dual sovereignty within certain spheres. Health, safety, and welfare of the people is handled at the state level, not the federal level. So we can conduct our own elections, thank you very much, without federal interference and certainly without any interference from the United Nations.
And I would assume that some of that sovereignty would extend. You've been a champion for following the Obamacare issue, and hopefully if we can get a conservative attorney general here in the state of Missouri, you can work to help that issue along as well.
Yes, if we could get Ed Martin elected, that would be wonderful because he has a plan to assist me and to take the lead in standing up to the federal government instead of meekly submitting to their dictates. We need an attorney general and a governor who will stand up to the federal government the way, say, Governor Rick Perry has in Texas. Say no not only to the Medicaid expansion called for in Obamacare that we cannot afford and must not sign on to, but also that we should be joining Governor Rick Perry from Texas in suing the EPA. The EPA has now become not the Environmental Protection Agency, but the Employment Prevention Agency. And they have ridiculous standards that they're ramming down our throat. They're essentially, as you know, Lisa, implementing cap and trade that they could not get the elected representatives of the people to pass into law. So they said, we're going to do it by, regulatory fiat and edict. We've got the rule by decree instead of the rule of law under this president. And Claire McCaskill's going along with it. So we need leaders at the state level who will join me in standing up to all these all this federal overreach.
Absolutely. So I'm assuming that you're meeting with some positive reinforcement out on the campaign trail. I understand you've been endorsed.
Oh, yes, indeed. You know, something big is happening across the state for the Romney-Ryan ticket. It's really the last, some people say it's the last gasp of constitutionalism. I say it's the beginnings of a new great awakening, the fourth great awakening in American history, where people are going back to study the Constitution and understanding, many of them for the first time, that the Constitution is our guarantee of liberty, and it's only by following the Constitution that we can preserve a self-governing republic to children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren yet unborn. So there's an enormous groundswell across Missouri, and it tells you all you need to know, Lisa, that the Obama campaign is not contesting Missouri.
Absolutely. Well, Lieutenant Governor, we wish you all the best of luck on the rest of the campaign over the next remaining days. If people want to get involved and engaged with your campaign, how can they find you?
Yeah, they can find me on Facebook. You can like my fan page on Facebook. You can find me at peterkinder.com or teamkinder.com. And we have campaign updates on Facebook. And you can follow me on Twitter. I'm creeping up towards 6,000 Twitter followers and would love to top that before the election, 13 days off. And in the meantime, I'll see you on the campaign trail as we fight to preserve our freedom under a government that is under a limited constitutional government, a self-governing republic.
Excellent. Best of luck to you, Lieutenant Governor.
Thank you, Lisa. I look forward to coming back on with you.
And we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back with Ray Cuneo on Agenda 21.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to the Culture Vigilante Hour on Missouri Grassroots Radio. We just finished up a segment with Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder running for re-election here in Missouri, and he spoke a little bit about the United Nations trying to reach its dirty little grimy hands in on our election process. And we've been doing a segment the last few weeks with Ray Cuneo. Ray Cuneo is probably the most learned person about Agenda 21 in the country. He knows more facts and details about this massive, massive encroachment on the United States and our government on every level that you can imagine. And we're trying to break it down into pieces for everybody to digest. And we spoke with him a little earlier this week, and we have a recording for you to hear today.
This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio, and we're fortunate enough to have with us again Ray Cuneo to help us along on our discovery about what Agenda 21 is and how it's going to affect the folks in Missouri and across the country. Thanks for being with us, Ray.
Glad to be here, Lisa.
Okay, Ray, I think when we left off last time, we were talking about we were getting a glimpse into how Agenda 21 was going to affect us personally in our daily lives, how it was going to change our culture. And you also mentioned that there are some positive efforts going forth within the legislature, both here in Missouri and nationally, trying to stave off these advances into our freedoms and our liberties. Tell me a little bit about what's going on.
Well, you know, of all the bad news we've been talking about for the last three or four programs, there is a glimmer of hope. Now, let me just reiterate here, Agenda 21 has been around for 20 years in the United States, and except for a very small handful of people, which I'm proud to be one of them, or honored to be one of them, didn't know about this, and we've been talking about it, but nobody's been picking up on it. So all through the Clinton years, through the Bush years, the federal agencies and state agencies have been implementing this, slow-boiling the people. But now, during the Obama administration, they're determined they're going to put the final nail in the coffin on Agenda 21 and get it to where it's a done deal. So it appears at least that at the beginning of the Obama administration, there was a growing awareness and an aggressive effort underway across the nation by a few activists, some of them national in scope, like Tom DeWeese and Michael Kaufman, Dr. Michael Kaufman, Henry Lamb, and some of us more on a regional basis. But the Obama administration has gotten so aggressive at the local level and working with local governments through the non-governmental organizations pushing this that I think people are beginning to wake up now. So the good news is that there's a slow awakening happening across the United States. It's far, far from anywhere having a majority of people. I mean, we're still very much a minority relative to the 310 million people. Congress is still asleep on it, except for a few of those that know what the agenda are, particularly in the Senate, like Harry Reid and others. But at any rate, at the state level, most of the state officials and local officials have been missing in action on this. They have no idea what we're facing up until just the last couple of years. And like I said, there's a growing awareness now. And beginning earlier this year, there seemed like there was a movement underway at the state levels where some of the activists opposing this have gotten to the state legislatures and has drafted legislation and has got it introduced. And only in one case, in the case of Alabama, they passed legislation and signed into law by Governor Bentley down there to prohibit any political subdivision of the state of Alabama from participating in Agenda 21 Sustainable Development. Now, that was really good news. Arizona, at the same time, their legislative session ran out. They ran out of time before they could get their legislation passed. Earlier this year, the state of Georgia and Tennessee passed legislative resolutions, opposing Agenda 21. I just got an email here in the last week or so getting an update on other states, and I just see we're now Wyoming, Montana, Minnesota, Washington, Oklahoma, Iowa, Texas, South Dakota, Wisconsin, and Arkansas have all passed resolutions opposing Agenda 21 Sustainable Development. Now, in addition to all of these resolutions and state legislative actions that are occurring, there are numerous counties across the United States that are now picking up and doing the same thing. So that gives perhaps your listeners some perspective as, hey, there is some hope out here, and we've got some momentum started. We just need to keep building that momentum because actually we have the proponents have a 20-year head start on us. So now when it comes to the state of Missouri, back when we got news of Alabama passing the legislation, I immediately went to work with some of our legislators here, got the various resolution language, the state of Alabama law language now, and sent it to some of our key legislators. I'm working primarily in the Senate, and this is in the Missouri Senate now. We're talking at the state level, Missouri.
Well, let me ask you this question, Ray.
Sure.
Okay, so Agenda 21 is huge. It's vast. It's so broad. It covers so many issues. What kind of legislation? How does the legislation target the issue? Is it a broad, sweeping resolution against the entire kit and caboodle, or are there issues specifically that these state and local legislations try to target?
No, mostly they're talking these resolutions, and the legislation addresses the broad overall, for example, comprehensive planning, extreme environmental social engineering, global political control, those things. And I'm kind of quoting here from some of the resolutions. For example, the National Federation of Republican Assemblies, they had a resolution here. Most of them are broad in nature. They're not saying, hey, you can't do this at such and such a place or such and such a time, other than to say like Alabama did. Alabama said, and I'm paraphrasing here, no political subdivision of the state of Alabama can participate in any of the policies or processes introduced by and contained in Agenda 21 Sustainable Development. Now, I don't know where you're probably leading to this point. Will there be a challenge to this law? You can bet on it, because it's so broad in nature. But just like the whole Agenda 21 Sustainable Development is a ubiquitous, broad, general concept, so are the resolutions and legislation opposing it.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that there will be the proponents of it at various levels that will challenge some of these laws if they do come into place, for example, like Alabama. But in the case of Missouri here, we're Senator Brian Nieves, early on this year, he's my senator, and I touched base with several of the representatives, and this goes back in early summer, and gave them tons of information on Agenda 21 Sustainable Development, and had various meetings with some of the, or individual meetings with some of them, and went over some of it, made sure they understood it. The other, so at any rate, where we now stand is we're in election season. We all know that. This thing is about over with, for better or for worse, and we pray for better. But most of the politicians said, look, as soon as we're done with this election cycle, we're going to jump on this thing at the state level, and we're going to start to work on drafting legislation. Well, they have some excellent models to draw from in all this, the Alabama legislation, the Arizona legislation, and all these resolutions. And by the way, I forgot to mention that the Republican, the GOP, it's in the GOP platform approved in Tampa. Now, I haven't seen the final document. I saw a draft, but it's my understanding it was approved. It was in the final draft of the GOP platform to oppose Agenda 21. So there's a lot of language that is very excellent written language, and I'll be getting some of this to you so that you can see it. And you can, a lot of your listeners can probably go online and Google up some of this stuff, National Federation of Republic Assemblies, or go to Alabama and Google up their legislation. So, and then you can see firsthand how it's being addressed. But at any rate, our hopes are that we're going to go and we're going to be able to draw up some. Now, as soon as the elections are over, I'm going to be sitting down with the legislators again. And in the case of Senator Nieves, he has said he's going to, in fact, right after the election, he's going to be sitting down with some of his colleagues to go over it firsthand. I suspect myself and a few others will be spending a lot of time up at the legislature in this next session that starts in January. Obviously, we can't do anything till it, other than to get prepared until the legislative session starts. So, we're enthused. We're hopeful that we're going to be able to follow everybody else's lead here and get something through in Missouri that's going to be. We hope it'll be more than a resolution. We hope we get some actual legislation, like Alabama. Of course, that's going to be predicated, and I'll just be honest with you about it. In all probability, if Jay Nixon gets reelected, we will not get elected. He would never sign the legislation. I would bet on that. So,
well,
at any rate, we're hopeful that we can get the right politicians to do the right thing.
Yeah, and sometimes having broad legislation is a good thing. Sometimes it's a bad thing. You know, I mean, you can if you have the buy-in from enough of the legislature to pass a resolution or to pass a broadly worded piece of legislation, it gives you a little bit more. And if it's, you know, if it's a test case, it's never been challenged before, never come up in Missouri, it gives you maybe a little bit more oomph to fight something in court that's never been tested before, to kind of make some definition that way.
I'm sure, Lisa, it will be tested. For example, the city of St. Louis, I just got an email yesterday, well, they just come up on their website. City of St. Louis had just adopted their sustainable development plan, which they got $3.7 million from the federal government in 2009, I believe, to to go to work on drafting it, which they have. They've completed it now. And any of your listeners, just go to the St. Louis City website and pull up their sustainable development plan. And it's pretty large. It's 200 and some pages, but you can read and skim through some of the index. But the thing I would encourage people to do when you look at that, look at the objectives and strategies. Look at the objectives and strategies, what the city of St. Louis is trying to do with Agenda 21 Sustainable Development.
Can you give us some examples of what they've got outlined in their legislation, Ray?
Well, you're talking about in the city of St. Louis?
Uh-huh.
Well, for example, it comes back to this concept of sack and pack, shove people in. They want to stop growth. Now, obviously, city of St. Louis cannot expand. I'm talking about the city of St. Louis can't expand because the county's all around them. So what they are trying to do, they're going to say, look, we're going to create all these green waves along River De Pere or wherever it might be. We're going to, and the other thing that caught my attention was we're going to get urban gardens. Everybody's going to grow their own food now in the city of St. Louis. And this is just one example of a specific example of what sustainable development is advocating for all cities and towns. They want to say, look, we don't want to take any more and consume any of our resources from rural America. We want to grow our own food here, right here in the city of St. Louis. We want people to stay here. We don't want you to get into that nasty automobile and drive anyplace and burn gas. We want to be able to control your energy and your water resources.
Ray, would it be conceivable?
I can't tell you. Go ahead.
Would it be conceivable that the Agenda 21 Sustainable Development for the City of St. Louis might be the roadmap for a city-county merger?
Oh, it could be. I mean, it could well be because, listen, right now, and I think we've covered this in one of your other segments, we got the East-West Gateway got $4.7 million in July of 2011 to draw up the same plan that the city of St. Louis has just completed, okay? So in the future, in a year or 2 years from now, I fully anticipate East-West Gateway is going to come through with a similar program that the city of St. Louis has already drafted for sustainable development. So my point being there, it would make sense for the county and the city to say, look, to integrate and to work all these sustainable development goals and objectives together, we should integrate our political systems. I mean, and I'm not saying it says that. I'm just saying it wouldn't surprise me to do that because the whole idea here is to have a regional concept. Under sustainable development is to have a regional concept of government, East-West Gateway. So it's really larger. It's even larger than a merger of, let's say, St. Louis City and St. Louis County. You could see a merger of East-West Gateway. Now, granted, we have individual political subdivisions. We have Franklin County. We have St. Charles County. We have Jefferson County. We have counties on the east side that are part of East-West Gateway. But the point being is they want an approach of regionalism. They want to be able to run. Now, even though regional government is not a constitutional form of government, the concept that is the concept behind sustainable development is to look at it on a region by region basis and that is the mechanism, as we've discussed before, that is the mechanism that the federal government has really been coming down. They've been coming to regional governments and saying, look, here are the goals and objectives, here's the money, here's how we want you to go into and draw up your plan for sustainable development if you get the money here, and look at it on a regional basis.
I can see a lot of parallels for a lot of things. A minute ago when we were talking about having the residents of the city growing their own food, if the government has control over the farmlands, the government can control the food sources.
Well, the thing about it is we touched on it a couple of segments ago, and I'm sure at some point in the future we'll get to the Wildlands Project, but there is a specific agenda for rural America, a specific agenda. That's why we keep saying relative to the cities and towns and metropolitan regions, they want no growth. They do not want to expand the borders of a metropolitan area. In other words, no growth. We don't want individual housing We want to stop that growth or control the growth. We want to shove them in and stack them up, or stack them and pack them, which is commonly referred to by a lot of us that are fighting as stack them and pack them. They are very much the agenda. 21 Sustainable Development is very anti-individual residents. They want multi-family residents.
Yeah, high-density housing. So
that's exactly right. High-density. And coming back to the zoning laws and things like that, that you can accomplish all that. And, again, I said I'm planning zoning. I see firsthand how it can be done. They can – local government can implement things that can absolutely stop growth of individual residents and – promote high-density developments, multi-use developments. I tell you one that comes to mind, and I haven't been over there for a while, is a new town in St. Charles. That's kind of a concept of new urbanism, and that's another thing they call it, new urbanism. This is basically new urbanism is to stop any kind of growth that government doesn't approve as sustainable and to shove them in and redevelop the inner cities and grow our own food and not use the resources of rural America, which ties into this thing that we'll talk about in the future called the Wildlands Project.
Okay. Well, you know
what? At any rate, your listeners need to do this. I'll leave them with this. Folks, if you're listening out there, please, please get educated as much as you can on this stuff. And not only educate yourself, but start talking to other people as to what it is. This is very real. It is absolutely frightening. And if you have any feelings, which I'm sure you do, for your family and your children, future and your grandchildren, you better become involved in this because that is what is at stake. That is what is at stake. And it's hard to get your hands around sometimes to really believe this is happening to our country. But do not mistake it. It is.
Okay, Ray, next time we get together, I do kind of want to talk about that Wildlands Project. But as far as what people can do to be proactive, again, do your research. It's on the Internet. The UN's website is on the Internet for everybody to see. Go to your local website. Go to your local municipality websites and take a look and see if there's anything on there about what you can do. I know that after the election, Missouri Grassroots Coalition is going to have the email addresses for all of the newly elected up there so that you can reach your elected and be proactive. Again, when you're doing your research, shoot these folks an email, give them a phone call, let them know that this is now on your radar and you want it to be on their radar too.
Elisa, one other thing I would tell you, the listeners out here, start talking to your elected officials here in Missouri about the upcoming legislative session, and I'm talking about the state officials. Start talking to them about supporting anti-Agenda 21 sustainable development legislation.
Absolutely, because the bills will begin to be pre-filed in the beginning of December, so this is the time to take proactive action and start letting your elected know that, you know, this is not where, you know, this is not the road you want to go down. Ray Cornillo, thank you so much for being with us. We hope to talk to you again next week, maybe about the Wildlands Project, part of sustainable development, and we appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, Lisa. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, we're back. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk to Terry Herring about the ballot initiatives in St. Charles County.
You better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why.
Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project.
Claus is coming to town.
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve, because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager. You're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is your Culture Vigilante Hour. We're here every Sunday night from 7 o'clock until whenever we're finished. And we've got a pretty packed, full-packed show for you tonight. We heard from Darren Morley from Reboot Congress talking about Claire McCaskill and her husband's business practices with your tax dollars and tax incentive program. My brain just died. Tax incentive programs, building businesses off the taxpayers' dollar. We just heard from Ray Cuneo. We heard from Peter Kinder. There's a lot going on right before election season, and we have been covering the ballot initiatives in St. Charles County, as well as the Save Our Sheriff Department campaign here in St. Charles County. And we would like to go over the initiatives one by one with you folks, because the election is right around the corner, and we want everybody to know why you should vote no on each and every one of those initiatives in St. Charles County. And with us tonight, we have an interview with Terry Herring. He was able to visit with us earlier this week and give us the rundown on each and every single one of those ballot initiatives and tell us why all of those things are power grabs designed to bring bigger government to St. Charles County and to take freedom and independence away from the voters here in St. Charles. And let's listen to that interview.
This is Lisa Payne Nager, and we are here with Terry Herring today. He's going to talk to us a little bit about the ballot initiatives that are going on the November 6th ballot. Terry's been with us the last several weeks talking about the St. Charles County Sheriff's issue in St. Charles County and all of the initiatives that go along with that. Thanks for being with us today, Terry.
Lisa, always a pleasure, and just for the record, I do represent the Missouri Patriots Forum.
That's right.
As their point person on the sheriff's thing, and also to talk with you on ballot initiatives today.
Okay, good. Well, we'll try to go over that. We talked a little bit before. You are going to be one of those people, kind of like me, voting no on just about everything except one thing on the state ballot, and tell me about that.
One on the state ballot that I would recommend a yes vote on is Proposition E. And I'll read it to you through the magnifying glass I have to use, because when you print it off from the county election office, it's more like an eye test. But it reads as follows. Shall Missouri law be amended to prohibit the governor or any state agency from establishing or operating state-based insurance exchanges unless authorized by a vote of the people or by the legislature? No direct costs or savings for the state and local government entities are expected from this proposal. Indirect costs or savings related to enforcement actions, missed federal funding, avoided implementation costs, and other issues are unknown. Basically, what this does is it keeps the people in the loop on the insurance exchanges that are part of the Obamacare package. And basically, the people have to have a voice in this, not unilaterally by the governor or any state agency. And this is a protection, I believe, for the state and for the people. Other than that,
Prop E is the ballot initiative that we had all the issues over with Robin Carnahan and her nasty language that she wrote, and the Supreme Court made her rewrite the language because it was so egregious. Right. So yes, I have a tendency to agree with you on all the state ballot initiatives. I'm voting no, except for that one, which I'm voting yes.
Yes. Yes, I would agree with you on that. And then we get into, you know, St. Charles County.
Yeah, let's talk about St. Charles County now. I mean, you know, we've talked extensively about the sheriff's issue here and the fact that there's a huge power grab going, not only with that issue, but really if you look closely at the other five issues on the ballot in St. Charles County, which is, you know, more than enough. It's just egregious that they're even putting that many issues on the ballot to change the charter. You read between the lines, there's a huge power grab going on in St. Charles County. So let's kind of go over these issues one by one. And what, first of all, Terry, what's your general feeling of having all these initiatives on the ballot?
Well, number one, I think your point on overwhelming the voters is a good one. Also, I think what they're trying to do is figuring that a general election every 4 years will turn out more people. Hopefully they're generating more votes for a particular initiative. I'm not so sure that that is so. As you know, when we have off-year elections, the turnout is low and only the zealots come out to vote, and a small minority can wreak havoc on the rest of the population who decides to sit home. I believe that each voter in the county and in the state has not only a right but a responsibility to acquaint themselves with the issues and come prepared to cast an appropriate vote either for or against something, but after research. The other part of that I think is important is to be very critical of the way the ballot initiatives are written and to probably have to look beyond the wording of the initiative and do a little background research, or at least listen to programs such as this to get at least a degree of insight as to what is happening. These are issues that will stand for a long time. And one of the things that I want to make a point on is this county charter itself. And if you want to equate the county charter for the county of St. Charles or any other county in the state, this is the equivalent of the United States Constitution for our county. And it should not be amended lightly. We should take a very hard look at what we're doing, because it does become the law of the county. And the Constitution of the United States has a very definite but difficult procedure to amend it, and I think that we should take all judiciousness in amending our county charter with the same care as we address the U.S. Constitution.
So absolutely. And they didn't do that in this case. They threw everything on the ballot in the middle of August, and knowing that they had a month to deal with these things before the ballot was printed. So, you know, when you should have months and months and months of input from the citizens and, you know, financial studies being done and all of those kinds of things, none of that was done on any of the ballots that have been put on the St. Charles County ballot in St. Charles County. And actually, there would have been 7 initiatives, except the court kicked one, so now we're just dealing with 6.
That was on the smoking ban issue.
Right.
And the point is, there's also supposed to be every 10 years a commission established to review the county charter and make recommendations. One of the commission has not met in a long time, and I would believe that the commission would be the more appropriate vehicle for taking a look at some of these things, and that's an issue to address after this election, because there's no time for it now.
And you kind of mentioned, too, before, the ballot language is so important, and I've read through the ballot language, and I've read through the bills that have placed these ballots or placed these initiatives on the ballot, and there's, you know, trying to connect these things is like, you know, slogging through the mud. You know, the ballots do not read very clearly, especially question 1, I think, which encompasses 5 different issues. You know, if you go to the ballot box on November 6th and just read these things for the first time, like most people will do, most people won't research the issues. And you're reading these things for the first time, you're really not going to know what in the heck is going on.
And as an old lawyer friend of mine said years ago, he says, "What the large print giveth, the small print taketh away."
Yeah, exactly. So let's go through these just real quickly, one by one. County Proposition A is attempting to allow the county executive the council to kick a council member off the county council. What do you think about that one?
That's the voters decide. The voters voted him in, and the voters should vote him out. And that's that. Why are we taking another vote away from the people of the county?
Right. There's already something in the charter that allows for the removal of council members and the voters. And it's also outlined for the voters to have special elections to put another member on the board. I would agree. I don't know why we're messing with it.
Well, because we want to retain power.
Yeah, it's a power grab by the county executive, I believe. Question one. You know, I called the county council's office, and I tried to get the bills establishing these initiatives, and I got most of them. Question one, I'm just lost.
And question one, are you talking about the Ellerman Oaks Road?
Oh.
Which question are you? Where are you at now? Are you talking about Proposition 2?
Well, let's see. I've got Proposition A, which we just discussed, and then I've got questions 1 through 4, and that's how it's listed on my ballot. And then we've got the sheriff's issue.
Okay, question one.
Question one: shall the charter of St. Charles County be amended as follows?
I turned the page. I took 2 pages instead of one.
Okay.
So now we're on to what? Question three.
Well, question one is the county shall be given written notice of the master plan to all government entities. And then there are 4 other issues in this question. And in my mind, this disenfranchises voters because you've got several issues in one question.
And when you try to pile this much into a question, people any reasonable person, what is really going to happen should this pass? And what is going to be the enabling directives that make this work? And those are questions that haven't been answered. And if you have to put such a complicated statement in for a ballot consideration, it should draw an automatic no.
Yeah, there's just too much going on in that. I'm voting no for that one. Okay, question two. This one ties directly to County Proposition A, as far as I'm concerned. Shall the county charter be amended to provide that a vacancy on the county council shall be filled by the county executive subject to approval by the council?
And again, one of the things that has been argued, and I've been in discussions where folks have argued both sides. One is special elections cost a lot of money. On the other side, they say, well, that's true, but it's the people's opportunity to vote on their council member as opposed to having the county executive nominate and have the council ratify. My position on this one is another no vote. I really believe that if for some reason a vacancy – here, just let's take the real ugly side of the fence, okay? And let's just say that we're coming up on maybe the end of the first period of the council member's term on the council, and just for a little underhanded discussion, the guy says, well, I'll resign and we'll have the county executive appoint Heathcliff so he can run as an incumbent next time.
Yeah, that power of incumbency is huge.
Yeah, and so my position on this is a no vote. Either let the position remain vacant until the next election or call a special election. I mean, we can take the issue of how much is it going to cost, but compared to the other wastage, this is minuscule in my book.
Well, when the county is spending money on certain things, this is something you want them to spend money on. If you need them to cut money for something else, that doesn't really apply to serving the people, let's do it there. But you never want to disenfranchise the people from having a vote, and I'm with you.
And there's a lot of effort toward disenfranchising, as you've seen, with just the police issue, and then there are some others here that we can touch base on, too.
Okay.
That work to disenfranchise the voters and that are really inappropriate and unnecessary.
Okay, let's move to question three.
Question three.
Okay, let's go. Shall the county council or shall the charter be amended to provide the county executive oversight of the working conditions of all the employees of the county, including the authority to investigate and to take action to prevent harassment, yada, yada, yada? Okay, you know, more of the same.
Well, at least in here, let's look at this. These heads of county departments are what? Elected people for the most part. And so what we're doing now by this is that we're basically giving the county executive, whoever that is, and I'm not in any way painting the current county executive as a bad guy, so I want that on the record. But the point being, these are elected department heads, and we already have procedures in county personnel manuals and everything else that address this very issue. I mean, this is covered statutorily. This is covered by county policies and regulations. There is no need for this. This is just another power grab. And again, going around the elected official to stick somebody's fingers into that official's operation.
Absolutely.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, we're electing people to do this job for us. Why are we taking it out of the hands of the folks that we're putting in office to do that job? So,
very good question.
It's a vote no for me. I'm with you on that one. Question four. This one I think is going to be deceiving, very deceiving. Shall the county charter be amended to prohibit an officer, employee, or county of the county from knowingly accepting any service, thing of value, other compensation, directly or indirectly, from any person, firm, or corporation having dealings with the county? Well,
these are conflict of interest issues, Lisa, that are already addressed in appropriate regulations.
That's what I thought. You know, there's no reason. Why are we amending it if we've already got it in the charter?
This is already there.
Okay, so why are they putting it on the ballot? That just makes me a little nervous.
Ma'am, I don't know.
Okay.
Somebody thought it was important, but again, it's redundancy, and who's going to be in control of it? Who's going to be in charge of this? It's already established.
Absolutely.
There are personnel policies, whether it's in the sheriff's department, whether it's in county offices, and, you know, elected officials, county employees, and public service employees in general are already prohibited from accepting gratuities, gifts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is just papering over something that already exists.
Okay. And then last but not least, our very favorite, county charter question law enforcement. And we've talked extensively on this in the past, and we know for sure that we want to maintain our right to vote our sheriff into office, because the sheriff is the last. We don't want the government to own the sheriff's department. We want the people to own the sheriff's department.
Well, again, that's absolutely correct, and we're taking one more elected official away from the voters. And number two, the other part of this that is still very troubling to me is that there's actually been zero due diligence done on this, and we're buying a pig in a poke with regard to what is the true cost to the residents of the county, the taxpayers, who are going to have to fund this thing. There is no way it's going to be a less costly situation than what we have now. It's going to be a more costly situation, and if it's so important to have top quality credentials for the quote unquote chief law enforcement officer of the county, then simply amend the charter with regard to the current qualification requirements for the sheriff as the sheriff's department exists now, and then leave out the last sentence that we've discussed that waives all the foregoing sentences of statements of qualification. It's just an absolute specious piece of work that, again, disenfranchises voters, raises costs, and does nothing to improve the quality of police protection services for the residents of the county, be they in incorporated or unincorporated areas.
Thank you, Terry Herring. We appreciate your input on this issue. People need to really – the issues are not as cut and dry as they're appearing on the ballot. People need to look into this, and they need to do the research themselves. And we will be back again next week. We're going to talk a little bit more about the sheriff's issue and get into some action items that you can do to help educate the community. Terry Herring, we appreciate you being here. Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure, Lisa. You have a wonderful day.
Thanks. You too.
Okay, we're back. We're winding things up. Want to kind of remind you folks of a couple of things. Go to politichicks.tv and read my latest article there. Todd Akin is $12 million behind in fundraising and a little bit behind in the latest Rasmussen poll, 8 points to be exact. And with the last few days of the campaign, he needs some money, and he needs the support of the Republican Party, or else we're not going to be able to take back the Senate. We're not going to be able to overturn Obamacare. So as a culture vigilante in Missouri, you need to contact the RNC, and you need to contact the National Senate Republican Committee. And at the bottom of that Politichicks article, you will find links there to be able to contact those entities and tell them you expect them to infuse some money into Todd's campaign so that he can have a commercial blitz the last couple of weeks before Election Day to bring those poll numbers up and to make sure that we take back the Senate here in Missouri. It's very important, and it's very important to get the action of the people involved, because the Republican Party has just been absolutely ridiculous in this entire situation, and they are placing us in danger of losing this Senate seat to Claire McCaskill and possibly not being able to overturn Obamacare. So the people need to get up and make some movement there and make a difference in this campaign. I want to tell you about a couple things. I'm going to be busy the next couple of days around and about. I'll be in Union, Missouri tomorrow night at the East Central College candidate forum. I'll be there at 6:30. Come on out and see me. Introduce yourself to me. I'll be happy to meet you out there. And on Friday evening, on the corner of Mexico Road and Cave Springs, we will be having a sign wave for the Save Our Sheriff Department campaign. We'll be out there with our signs. Come join us. We're trying to raise awareness. A lot of the people in St. Charles County do not know about this initiative, and they won't know about it until they walk into the ballot booth or the voting booth on the 6th. So we're trying to help spread the word. Please go to SaveOurSheriffDepartment.com, that's DEPT.com, and look at the actions tab. There are a number of things that we need to get rolling here the last couple of weeks. We need poll workers. There's a place for you to sign up where we can contact us so we can contact you to put you in a polling place. It's very critical that we have all of the polls manned on Election Day so that people know what they're getting into when they walk into the voting booth. We can alert them to this situation. The sign waves will be listed there. There's also a place there with all of the information for you to be able to write a letter-writing campaign to all of the county council members, to Steve Ellman, the county executive, to Sheriff Neer, and all of the local newspapers and online newspapers. All of the patches are listed there. The St. Louis Post-Dispatch is listed there. The Suburban Journal is listed there. And because we don't have a lot of money and we're not going to get the advertising that we really need to be able to reach everybody, we need people to go out and reach out to those entities and make their voices heard and educate the people through the power of the pen. Go to your local media. The local media is not going to cover it, so we need you to help us with that. And don't forget to join us on the sign wave on Friday. I'll be there. And we're trying to plan another sign wave for November 3rd on Saturday in Wentzville. We'll keep you posted on that. That information may already be up on the website. So if you have a chance, please visit, again, SaveOurSheriffDepartment.com or .org. And get active and involved, and sign up for a polling place, sign up to get email updates, and if you need a yard sign for your yard, we'll get you a yard sign as well. And that's almost it. We have tomorrow night, Kevin Harnett will be on with Hillbilly Logic. He's on here at 7 o'clock every Thursday night with us. And Friday night will be our wonderful MGC roundtable with
Dave, and probably me calling in from the sine wave, and maybe Kevin and Terry. And on Monday nights, we have Dave Court, Hour of Truth. Dave, you're still here, I take it, I hope. What have you got anything lined up for Monday?
Monday, we are going to have a little discussion, probably spend most of the hour discussing this one we've been putting off till the very last, this St. Louis control of the police department issue. Then, of course, we will review where we're at, and that'll be our last real session before the election.
And I think you're having Cynthia on in the following week. Is that right?
The following week, yes, on Election Eve, we're just going to kind of do a wind-down party with our friend Cynthia Davis.
Okay, very good. And that should probably wind it up for us. If you haven't had an opportunity to go to the Secret Santa page on the Missouri Grassroots Coalition website, please go there and send us a couple dollars. We're just a few dollars away from our goal of reaching $500. So that we can help some Missouri families who've fallen on hard times provide a nice Christmas for their kids and keep that Christmas magic alive. And anything else, Dave? Am I forgetting anything?
I don't think so. I think that's a pretty good show, Lisa.
Yeah, we run a little long again tonight, so we'll sign off. We will see you here again next week on Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock. We'll have Gary Wigard on, and we'll have Mr. Cuneo back with some information about Agenda 21 and probably a couple surprises along the way. So thanks for being with us. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio, and this is Lisa Payne Nager, your culture vigilante on Wednesdays. We'll see you next week.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org.